Welcome to Small Bites Radio with Donato Marino and Derek Tim. We hope you're hungry.
Round spaghetti you can eat with a spoon. Oh, SpaghettiOs.
Hit it.
Why is the beef?
Cookie.
Nothing for you.
Feed me more.
As long as I can have you here with me, I'd much rather be forever in blue jeans, babe.
Welcome, everybody, to Wildfire Radio Small Bites. I'm Donato Marino with DNL Bean the Barista Coffee Service. And in studio with me is the one and only...
Be with me, everybody in blue jeans.
See? Thank God you had a face for radio.
Exactly. Yeah. And a voice for no fans. Derek Tim of BlueJeanFood.com. Good to see you, Don.
Same here.
Cool winter, spring-like day. Seems like every time we come in here, it's chilly again.
Yeah, I'm enjoying spring. It's coming along slowly but surely.
Supposed to be 80-something this week, but do you know what gets me nice and warm? Makes me really feel good, an ambiance about myself.
And what is that?
A voice, usually. Sort of like the voice from above.
The one and only.
John.
Howard Fusco.
How's it going tonight, John?
Evening, guys. How are we doing tonight?
We are doing well.
Doing great, John.
Do you like to be called the omnipresent voice from above?
I apologize. The connection's kind of bad. I'm not home. I'm actually a little ways away. So I'm going to go through my report here. Just to get it out of the way and have you guys get on your show. A lot of talk this week about Chef Christina Martinez's new restaurant, which is just three doors down from her South Philly Barbacoa location. Soft opening with a preview of the menu was held this past Friday, but as of yet, there's no official opening date. According to Michael Klein, the Inquirer, they hope to be open in time for the Italian Market Festival in late May. The Bach Bar in South Philly is back for another season. It's its seventh season. This is according to Philly Mag. The bar will open this Thursday, April 14th, and look for a lot more collaborations with local chefs throughout the season. If you're heading down to Citizens Bank Ballpark this season, look for new offerings that are being offered there, including Manco and Manco Pizza from down the shore and Colby's Southern Kiss Chicken, which has a location in Mount Holly. And one of the owners has a well-known connection with the Phillies. That's because he's former great Ryan Howard is one of the owners of Colby's. So they are being served at the ballpark. And Marilyn Johnson from Philly Grub mentioned that Hip City Veg is turning 10 years old this week and is running a giveaway with the grand prize being free food for a year. So that contest is running now through the end of April. So again, Hip City Veg, congratulations, 10 years old this week. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Eating Nest Jersey, as well as on the South Jersey Food Scene website and Facebook page.
All right. Thank you, John. Have a great night. Okay. Thank you. Oh, hopefully.
All right, guys.
Thank you, John. Take care.
I hope everyone else will be able to hear us fine.
Yeah.
I always get jitters when people start. You see me sweating? No, don't you back that. Tom sees how nervous I get sometimes. But I have to thank you publicly, Don, for all of the wonderful holiday gifts that you provided
to
family. I mean, Don is the go-to source for Italian specialties.
The Italian Easter eggs are always my favorite. Always my favorite.
So fancy, too. Why don't you describe what you had? I love the egg. It's amazing.
Yeah. We start off with a colomba, which is a traditional. It stands for dove, which is the symbol for Easter, the holy ghost. And the one that I gave you is loaded with pistachio cream.
I love pistachios.
Icing, and it comes with a jar of pistachio cream. So as you cut it open, you take the cream and you put it across like a marmalade, and you enjoy it. It's a phenomenal dish, pastry. The particular one that you have, it comes from Sicily, which is Brondoce, which is known very well for the pistachios.
Oh, so it has a purpose.
Yeah, and the Easter egg you have is a 550-gram egg. It has a surprise in the middle. Ooh. And most people, I'm not sure if they all know, but the egg is a symbol of fertility,
okay.
Which it stands for spring, renewal, you know, planning the for the harvest, and hopefully eat the egg, you get pregnant, and
anybody
life
who
goes
wants
on.
These wonderful Italian products are able to get them where?
You can get it at D&L Coffee Service. Right now, the products are limited due to the supply chain issues. So look us up on Facebook. And if you're interested, and if we still have any in stock,
you'll
be more than happy
provide them.
Yeah, definitely.
And it'll make your holiday amazing. Don showed it to me. I was like, holy geez, Don, I didn't know you loved me so much.
Yeah. And well, they make all different sizes. So, you know, there's some you can smuggle a little kid in the inside, ship it somewhere.
Well, we don't want to go get smuggling stuff, Don. Come on. Going to tip us off to the DEA here. But talking about going places or shipping somewhere, we want to ship our butts closer to the shore because, one, the weather's getting nicer, even though it's cold today.
Always good in the sand down the shore.
This week, it's definitely going to feel like shore weather, and we've got the perfect person online to talk to, and that is John Henderson, the executive producer of Good Time Tricycle Productions, and they're having their first ever at Bure hosting a chili knockout and spicy food festival that will take place at the Orange Loop Arena on New York Avenue. But here's the man, the professional, the expert to tell us all about the event, how it came about, and what anyone can expect if they go down to Atlantic City. How's it going tonight, John?
Hey, Derek, what's going on, my man?
Nothing much. So tell everybody about this first inaugural event. It sounds fantastic. I loved it as soon as I read about it.
Yeah, you know, we're excited. We always look for, and we did this back when we started the Beer and Music Festival, and, you know, it's moved on to the Down Beach and Witchcraft and kind of all the programs we do, is we look for kind of a gap. What would people really like to attend in the market? And then we get together with a lot of culinary friends and we create, you know, the concept. And this, we thought spicy food, you know, it's springtime, the weather's still kind of cool, you know, a good spicy dish could be a lot of fun, you know, chilies. You know, what you can't go wrong with a good chili. And we've got all types of varieties from, you know, guys making green chilies to hearty chilies to, you know, so we thought it'd be a cool day out, you know, test some people kind of bragging rights with their spice, because we're going to do a lot of fun programming around, you know, peppers and guessing hot sauces. And, you know, we've got a woman eating fire. So we really kind of playing up, heating up spring, but from a culinary standpoint.
And the thing is, what I like is you have so many of these regional restaurants competing as well. It's going to be a competition.
Yeah, so you can get two different tickets. You can get, hey, I'm just coming to eat spicy food and try some chili ticket for $15. Or you can come in and you can be a judge. And for $25, you get a punch card and you get to walk around and try all these chilies. And what happens at the end is it's all people's choice. Winner take all, people's choice. We tally the votes, and the chili with the most people's choice votes wins $5,000. And $5,000, they split in half. $2,500 goes to the restaurant. $2,500 goes to a charity of the restaurant's choosing.
That's amazing.
That's nice.
I really like that aspect of it.
Doing something different. Yeah, yeah. You know, we thought, you know, at first, you know, like with our seafood fest, you know, we partner with the Community Food Bank of New Jersey because it's a hugely important feeding people in our region, especially with, you know, food insecurities is huge. So we thought, all right, our seafood fest, it makes sense. You know, go with the Community Food Bank. For this event, we thought, you know what, there's so many of these restaurant partners are so philanthropic that we know that they all have, you know, charities that they look out for. You know, Elvis, you know, with Vagabond is all over the place. He helps with Vagabond Charities, helps so many different organizations. Ourselves, we lean towards the food bank or Gilda's Club, the cancer support community. So we thought, all right, instead of us choosing who that charity was going to be, let's let the restaurants, I mean, they're cooking for something. I mean, it's the cash prize is always good. you know, but to be able to give back, I mean, you know, in a community, and all of our events have this very community feel. We bring in local brick and mortar restaurants, and it's done purposely. We like the revenue from a festival like this to stay within the community. And it's philanthropic. It's, you know, kind of checks all these kind of cool boxes.
And one of my favorite things to do, I don't know if you agree, Don, is whenever I go to an event or even if I'm on vacation somewhere, one of my favorite pastimes is people watching.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. 100%. 10 out of 10.
And this is going to be a great event that people watch.
Why? Oh, why?
Food people come in all shapes and sizes.
Yes, they do.
But not only because of shapes and sizes, but the best people watching is you're going to have a pepper eating contest. And the restaurants are also going to offer a variety of five alarm dishes.
Yeah, some people think you could eat more peppers than they really can.
Or you're going to have people there trying these five alarm dishes who think, oh, I can eat spicy food. And next thing you know, they're covering their mouth. And that alone is worth the price of admission, in my opinion.
It definitely is.
Wouldn't you agree, John?
Oh, yeah. So 100%. We have we're going to have a station with ice cold milk. You know, because that's going to be necessary, you know, to calm it down. You know, our friends at Dogfish Head, our beer partner, High Noon, is going to be there to, you know, kind of cool people off. And we've got Mr. Fingers, Alibi Gin, and Little Water Distillery, each making spicy cocktails.
And this,
so, yeah, there's going to be a lot.
And like you said, this is really kicking off the summer shore season, let's say, a little early. But this is really part of the revitalization of Atlantic City, because a lot of this is going on with the growth of the Orange Loop. For anyone who's not familiar with it or hasn't been to Atlantic City for a while, why don't you describe exactly what the Orange Loop is? Because if any outsider like, oh, a Chilean contest at the Orange Loop, you're like, well, that sounds kind of odd.
So there's been a group of gentlemen who, you know, as far as different developers, have kind of worked up this section. You know, kind of if you look at it, the Irish Pub is kind of is at the top of it, right? And the Irish Pub has been an Atlantic City, you know, iconic destination for forever. You know, and then a gentleman by the name of Mark Colazzo and Pat Fasano and Evan Sanchez, they all started to pop up and create programs and partnering with the community. You know, they brought in Grace and Glory, and Pat brought in Heyday Coffee, and they started to kind of bring these entrepreneurs, you know, into this neighborhood, creating which they called the Orange Loop. Well, Pat had secured this parking lot right next to a building which was actually the old Rolling Cherub building. And the space, believe it or not, 6 years ago, we'd actually launched our knee-high knucklebuster micro wrestling in, but it was a parking lot across from a comedy club. It wasn't the vastness of the entire lot, but Pat had secured that entire space. Now, last year, they did a couple small events. They did a really nice jazz festival, and it proved to itself that it could almost be a centerpiece, right? Because if you look at, you know, where it lays in Atlantic City by Bally's, Claridge, it's literally smack in the city of Atlantic City. So you have the Orange Loop, and then you have this, what they're touting is a arena. Now, it's not quite an arena yet, but it has the ability to be a great kind of centralized common space for festivals, tastings, you know, events. So it really kind of puts a nice cherry on the top of what they're trying to do with entrepreneurial endeavors, because they host a lot of events that are put on by, you know, smaller companies. You know, the Jazz Fest that they put on last year was a small company. They're taking on they haven't announced it yet, but a big music festival at the end of the summer, you know, and they're utilizing that space. It could be a great, you know, and we're proving the concept, you know, for a food festival space with the Chili Knockout in this space with Pat and Charlie at Bouret, some of the Loteria up on the boardwalk, Tennessee Avenue, Cuzzy's. You know, I see all these restaurants, they're getting on board, as well as, you know, Vagabond, Crossroads. You know, there's just local restaurants jumping on board. I think it's going to be a cool showcase, not only of, you know, the culinary assets the city has, but the space itself. So other producers can say, hey, that's a viable resource.
Without a doubt. And also, we want to let anyone know that who's thinking like maybe they have children or anything like that. They're like, man, I want to go to Atlantic City, but it sounds like it's going to be wild. This is a family friendly event, especially that you're allowing children 12 and under to attend for free. So just right there, it's an affordable time that enjoy yourself for the entire family.
Yeah, I think it's important, especially now, right? We've got to watch every consumer's dollar, right? You know, we don't want to, and that's why we left Ticketmaster and went with a subsidiary, it's Universe, because fees were so much lower, you know, because then we've got to tack on the tourism tax and things, you know, these things add up. So we always want to make sure that there's a level of affordability. You know, we try to talk to the restaurants about keeping their price points. You know, yes, we want you to make money, but we also want to make sure that, you know, it's volume driven and that you can make money and kind of serve almost, you know, every consumer that shows up, because we're expecting roughly, you know, 3,000 people. So, you know, if we can keep it affordable, you know, it encourages that more people. Many people say, oh, let's bring the kids, let's bring mom, let's bring grandma, you know. But affordability is key.
Without a doubt. And also, it's always priceless to watch kids because they're fearless.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, oh, let me try
anything. Yeah.
let me try that.
I mean, they eat boogers. They're going to eat a pepper anyway.
Hey, I eat boogers too. I mean, no. And I eat pepper. So I guess it proves your theory correct. But
you've
been saying for quite some time, Don, and I think John's proving the point that Atlantic City is happening and a 3,000 person expected event for its inaugural time is proof in the pudding.
And to invite the local restaurants to participate and increase the local traffic around the area. I think it's a first step in bringing Atlantic City back to where it used to be.
Yeah, because I think, John, you're well versed in this event world, especially how successful the other events that you have put on. And you know that without the support of the local community and the residents, it's not going to be successful because no one wants that big name to come in. And then everybody's like, well, why are they doing it? Because they're going to take all the profits and it's not even going to be left in the community.
Yeah, it's important. The foundation of kind of my entire company and the events that we put on, every community we go into, like, you know, when we did Witchcraft in Hamilton, you know, when we do our Seafood Fest in Ventnor, we integrate ourselves into the community as much as possible. Say, okay, what are the assets that the community already has? You know, okay, let's use those assets. You know, how many, you know, what vendors can we use in this, you know, in this area code, you know, and start to kind of build from there. And, you know, we keep a lot of money in Atlantic County, you know, and most of our money we keep in New Jersey. And it's by design. We built this business not by, you know, spending, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on advertising, but by working with community partners to help spread the word because they felt vested. You know, and I think, you know, if you're looking at the long term of any major festival, you know, when these big festivals kind of kick in doors and, you know, push their way around and, you know, use big, you know, ovations, big catering centers, corporate catering centers to serve food and X out the, you know, the vagabonds and the little, you know, the people who pay taxes here, right? You know, you don't see a lot of long-term potential. But when you include restaurants and you include, you know, even right down to, you know, Perfectly Clean, our partners who help, you know, clean up, they're a local contractor, our dumpster providers, local contractors, Sound and Lights, you know, all of that, you know, the community thrives, so they're going to keep propping up the event. You know, it's cyclical. You know, it doesn't happen with a lot of these large-scale corporate-driven events. And you've seen it with, you know, I'll use the vegan food festival that comes to the city. You know, what Elvis did with Vagabike. You know, there's a lot of there's a horror convention in the city right now. You know, there's a lot of these events that, you know, locally get propped up. And they see success, and you'll expect to see those shows around, you know, for a decade. Like our Seafood Fest being 12 years old, our Beer Fest on its 16th year, our Tattoo Expo is now 19 years old, like our Micro Wrestling 6 years old. These are all propped up by a community, and in turn, you know, the festival has an obligation to prop up the community as well.
And I mean, it's obviously the reason why you are the go-to event provider in the Atlantic City area. You're professional. You always exceed expectations. You're putting on great events. But I do realize we forgot one major important fact, Don.
Which is?
We forgot to mention when this is. And the event is Saturday,
May
21st, between 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. We want everyone to go down. It's going to be the Chili Knockout and Spicy Food Fest. And all these events that you have going on, I saw Don. He's licking at the bit. And I think Don wants to work together on an espresso and coffee expo down there, don't you, Don?
Yes, I do.
Sounds
plus,
like
I want to know what chilies funny. The fire breathers are going to be eating, because they're the chilies I don't want.
You'll skip that taste
that
testing.
I'll definitely skip.
But if you're interested in the coffee and espresso expo, Don is ready. He's got his notebook out, and I'm sure you two will connect. But thank you so much, John. It was such a pleasure talking to you. Share a website, social media link, anything like that before you go, pal.
Yeah, gentlemen, I appreciate you having me. So chiliknockout.com, you know, that's you can find us at Chili Knockout or the Chili Knockout and Spicy Food Festival. I was on the Book of Faces, Good Time Tricycle on Instagram. Yeah, man, you know, hit us up. You know, we've still got some spots. If there's some restaurants you want to come and kind of show their wares, man, we got a spot or two left. Yeah, thanks again for your support, guys, man. Looking forward to seeing you on May 21st in New York Avenue.
Will do. Have a great night. Thanks so much.
All right. Cheers.
Goodbye. But such an awesome event, Don, and it seems like we're getting back to normalcy.
Well, we definitely are, and there's nothing like talking spring like a nice bowl of chili.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And talking about a nice event and talking spring, every spring it means that things are in the air, and it's usually the Philly Chef Conference with Drexel University. As you know, they put on a wonderful conference. This year's 2022, one of the participants, chef participant, is Suzanne Barr, who happens to be our next guest. Look at that.
What timing.
Amazing. It's amazing how that works out. Susan, how's it going tonight?
Hi, how are we all doing?
Hey, Susan,
thanks
how are
for
you?
Having me.
It is our pleasure.
Good, good, good.
Now, you are one of America's northerly neighbor, a Canada's most respected chefs, and you have a flair for fresh comfort food and a passion for the local community, food security, and advocacy for many organizations. But more importantly, you're on to talk about this new memoir you have published called My Aki Tree, a chef's memoir of finding home in the kitchen. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how the book came about?
Absolutely. Thanks so much again for having me on the show. This is my first time in probably, I think, 20 plus years coming back to Philly and coming back off of a whirlwind launch in Toronto. So it's really nice to kind of continue the conversation about what My Aki Tree is all about. And it's really about my story as, you know, training as a chef in New York and then traveling between New York and Hawaii and south of France and working as a private chef and then eventually opening my first restaurant in Toronto, you know, being an American and a Canadian at the same time, but of course, being of Caribbean descent, it's about my coming of connecting back to the food that I most know because I grew up eating it. But more than anything else, it's connecting with my family. And most importantly, it was connecting to my mother through food, which is, I think, for a lot of people, it's that nostalgic moment of connecting the dots that we sometimes want to, you know, maybe push down and then they come back up to the surface when maybe sometimes we don't always want to remember and sometimes we don't always want to talk about. But this is a book that really, you know, shares, has opened up in such a candid way with Suzanne Hancock. And it's something I'm very proud of. And my family finally got a chance to hold the book and read the book as well.
That's amazing. And one of the things that you do highlight is that in this industry, unfortunately, still to this day, women are sort of marginalized in the kitchen. It's getting better. There is progress, but there are still stereotypes, especially of minorities in behind the scenes in the kitchen, what it takes, the practices and such that are in the atmosphere of what's going on and the way things operate. And also how it is important it is when you're in this business to have a good landlord, because sometimes that can become a nightmare in itself. How difficult is it to just keep on? Oh, they always say it doesn't matter how many times you get knocked down. It's how many times you get you pick yourself back up. But it wears you out at times, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you touched on a little bit of everything that, you know, I talk about in the book. From, you know, the day that I opened the restaurant, I found out I was pregnant. And being the head chef, also the co-owner, and also, you know, a mentor in that space, it was probably the first 3 months were the most challenging, because I had to deal with my physical body was shifting and changing. And then in the 3 years we ran that restaurant, it also dealt with, you know, I was, you know, in the situations where I had my son to my back while I was cooking, and the strength I had to find, the perseverance I had to keep going. And, you know, we see, you know, the roles of women chefs, female chefs, and kitchens versus male chefs. And having children, it was something that I didn't necessarily was against or for. It just happened, and my partner and I decided to move in that direction. But it's definitely something that as a female in the kitchen, we have to consider and think about. And then, you know, it's ownership. Ownership is something that, you know, folks of color, we are still fighting for. Mental health and mental health awareness, fair and living wages, these are still very important conversations that we have not begun to scratch the surface on. Conversations we are really pushing with coming out of COVID to put these to the forefront, that no longer can we just accept the fact that people aren't just going to show up to work. They want to be considered that this is our career, and we want to be a part of a running system that believes in the future of hospitality. But there's a lot of sacrifices that need to be made. There's a lot of conversations that need to continue to happen.
Point on. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. And one of the other points that you bring out is one of the things that me and Don talk about occasionally, because Don's in the industry with D&L Coffee Services, is how odd it seems of how often chefs are on the move. Because just as though it seems like they're getting comfortable in one spot, boom, the chef's at another restaurant. And I always equate chefs as artists, like musicians and actors and things like that, because I think that when you're a creative mind like chefs are, you're in that sort of category, an artist category. And Don, you've always mentioned to me, like, it's hard to keep your book in order because they're always on the move.
Yeah, they... Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a great point. I think that, like most industries, I think what comes to my immediate, you know, response to that is that, you know, life gets very interesting. The industry has shifted and changed. We've seen from, you know, people that have been, you know, the headliners, the most important conversationalists within the industry, they are passing away. The physical the strain that takes from your body to keep it going, the creativity, the new younger generation that's coming in, there's so many complexities that I think for chefs, it's like whether that restaurant understands and wants to ride the wave with you, or whether you yourself are challenged with, like, is this still worth it? Do I want to stay the course and stick with it? So there's a lot of things to kind of factor in why chefs are maybe, as you're saying, on the move. But I think a lot of it has to do with a lot of self-realization and self-awareness.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult at times. I mean, and Don's always keeping that book up to date.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of the chefs, they're, like you said, they're creative, and they don't always see eye to eye with the owner of the restaurant. And they're like, well, if you can't see my vision, then I want to find a place that I could excel and what I believe in, and cook the method that I'm used to, or I want to proceed.
And that's why I've always equated the chef to sort of like the singer of a band, because there's been some famous singers that you'll follow them, but the band you're like, oh, I could do without. And I think that has proven itself with some high profile chefs, that you will follow them because you believe in their vision. It's truly a vision that chefs have. But moving on to as you mentioned, the younger generation and things like that, I think that's where your book can really help someone who's coming into this or has questions or is wondering, is this industry really for me? What would you say are the top two things that you could tell someone who's interested to join this industry? Sort of like if you could look back in the past at yourself and tell yourself these two things, like be prepared for this and that, because that's where things can get sort of hairy.
Now, great question. Complicated, but great question, because I feel like there's two would be great, but I feel like I have five, but I'm going to give you two right now. And I would say, I always tell any chef that, and any cooks that I've worked with, that, you know, if you, you know, it's not going to always be easy, and you will see the complexities of, you know, your own vision, maybe not coming, not the first restaurant, maybe not the second restaurant. And being able to see that there is a greater goal from this experience, that is something that you have to cherish, and you have to take some of those moments of like, why am I going through this to go through that? There's silver linings to every opportunity that you're a part of. And just make sure your eyes, your ears, your spirit is ready, willing, and able to listen in. And then I would also add that for any, you know, chef coming in, it's like, make sure you put yourself on the plate. Make sure you expect that you are going to be respected in the space, whether you're coming in as a dishwasher, supporting staff, garde-manger, sous chef, whatever your position is, that you're valued and you feel valued and you go in. If you're not feeling that, then you need to question what is inadequate, what's not working, and how can you make sure that that is something that you can address? Making sure you're in a safe space, that's key to being able to continue to do this work, because so many times we just take the first job that we get offered, but make sure it feels right, make sure it sounds right, and make sure you feel connected.
Great advice.
Very good advice.
And I think if more people can really stick with that, and I think the point that you made of a lot of people jump at that first offer because you're worried, like, yeah, I may not hear from anyone else, but you took the offer that wasn't really for you. You didn't wait for that offer that would have been a better fit or a better role for your personality or your vision. So I really love that advice that you've given. But going back to the book, you put a lot of reflections, a lot of yourself out into the book. You've really laid your heart and soul for the world to read the trials and tribulations and also the great things that have happened throughout your life and career. But as we mentioned, there's a lot of difficult parts. What do you think was the most heart-wrenching or difficult portion to write about, to say, you know what? I don't want to share this, or this is rough to write, but I have to in order to let people know that this is my story.
You know, I think for me, writing about my mother was the big thing. And that was also because I didn't cook Jamaican food for most of my career. And that was because sometimes things that are so hard and so heavy and so deep, and we have like strapped it down, we have said we don't need to bring that up, I've had enough years of therapy to work through the tears, that to me was the most difficult thing about writing this book, because I didn't know how to talk about something that happened so many years ago. For me, I was in my 20s, you know, mid-20s when she passed, and I was writing this book in my mid-40s, and you know, I was trusting in someone that I had built a friendship and a kinship with, Suzanne Hancock. And, you know, like trusting to share that information with someone, letting someone know a bit of my weakness, like, you know, relating back to my mother and making sure that that's something that it's not going to, it's not, doesn't have the same power that it did to me when I was 23. I have an ease to talk about it, but that ease was definitely challenged in the process of writing it. So I think I was hoping that anyone were to read this book is that they can reflect back that some of our harshest and our scariest moments in our life are the ones that give us the strength in the darkest of hours. And also they empower us to keep going and share our stories, because you never know who's reading it, and you never know what that's going to connect for them and when that's going to unlock for them. And that's ultimately what I hope this book will do for anyone that picks it up.
I think it certainly will. And I think that's great that you've shared that. But on a final note, I mean, the places that you've been able to work and be a part of some organizations and even the locations that you have worked in, New York City, Atlanta, Hawaii, Hamptons, France, it goes on and on, very highly acclaimed, award-winning destinations. What to you was the highlight or your favorite place that's been with you for your career so far?
That's so easy. Hawaii. That was, I mean, it's just even saying the name Hawaii, like
it gives you goosebumps. That, you know,
yeah, you're like, one day I'll make it there. And it's, you know, it was like this, it was a magical place that I didn't know much what I was stepping into. I just knew that I had met the chef Beverly Gannon from the James Beard House, and she had placed an invitation. And I was the type of person, if someone is giving me an invitation, I'm going to follow through. And that invitation unlocked this, you know, me learning about, you know, the island, learning about myself, learning about this place that my mother had always dreamed about going. And I was able to create and paint my own picture, my own memory of this place. And I felt her while I was there. I connected with myself and my desire to have my fingers in the earth and what it meant to feel connected to a piece of land. And that home was really anywhere I could make it. And that did feel like home to me in this very, you know, unique way, because I had only spent about 3.5 months there, but I dug my feet deep into the soil, into the land, into the conversations and into the work. And I worked so hard, but Hawaii will always and forever be the most magical experience of my career as a chef.
See, and I thought I thought she was
going
to say after a 20-year absence from Philadelphia, it was going to be Philadelphia. Wishful thinking, though. Wishful thinking, though. But I have to say, Chef Suzanne, without a doubt, the reason why you're one of Canada's most respected chefs. We appreciate you joining us again in the City of Brotherly Love and taking part of the 2022 Philly Chef Conference hosted by Drexel University. But most important, we want everyone to go out and purchase your book, My Akitri, A Chef's Memoir of Finding Home in the Kitchen. Please share social media, website, or anything like that before you go, please.
Yes, you can all check me out at Suzanne@SuzanneBarFood.com. My social handle is Suzanne_bar_food. I look forward to continuing conversations. This was so great being back in Philly, talking to you, and now going back downstairs to the reception at, you know, the study. It's been a nonstop beautiful weekend. So thanks so much for having me on the show.
No problem at all. You're always welcome. And we love having you in the City of Brotherly Love. Have a great night.
Me too. Bye now.
Don, I think I messed up the order because we missed Mexico. Obviously, Suzanne covered Canada's most respected chef. So we covered that part of North America.
Yes.
And now we also have America's favorite TV chef.
Yes, we do.
So we are representing North America. It's my fault we didn't bring Mexico on board to celebrate this North American celebration, but we are going to go with America's favorite TV chef because he's got some information to share as well, because he's got an awesome new cookbook that people are going to love, because I know everybody has air fryers now. It's the hot product to have. And he has his new book, Loving Your Air Fryer, 110 Fast and Easy Recipes for Morning to Late Night Munching, your favorite QVC mainstay and Pennsylvania native, best-selling author Eric Theis. How's it going tonight, Eric?
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
We are doing great. Pleasure to have you join us. So, like I said, I mean, these air fryers, talk about best things since sliced bread.
Well, you know what it is? I think a lot of people have air fryers, and they have no idea how to use them. They see little clips on TV, and they're like, oh, I could do this.
But that's why Eric's here.
But your book, Eric, the way you put that together, I could see some of the flaws that, you know, my wife tries very hard to use it. And I think with this book, she's going to be a professional.
Oh, look at that.
Wow. Listen, you guys, first of all, we're going to fly to Hawaii because I was listening to that other segment. We're going to fly to Hawaii, and I'm going to do a whole course in Hawaii with you guys to tell everybody how to use their air fryer and get the fullest out of it. What do you guys think?
We're ready to go with you.
I'm down for it. Oddly enough, I wonder why I've packed my suitcase on my way to the studio tonight.
Well, I always knew you guys were super smart. And, hey, thanks for having me here, and I'm super excited to talk about my book, Loving Your Air Fryer, because, like you said, everybody's got one, and, you know, maybe they already love it. Maybe they need to learn how to love it. And I figured, you know, there's a lot of great recipes in here that are simple, easy, and fun, that have tons of flavor. What I like to say is pounded with flavor. That's what we like to do to our recipes here. And, you know, I use PowerXL air fryers. And, you know, back in the day, we did an infomercial with TriStar. I did an infomercial with TriStar. And we sort of, like, set the world on fire because when air fryers first came out, they were, like, $500. They were, like, crazy aspirational kind of thing that it was sort of, like, in the shadows. And then, you know, we figured out a way to get them, you know, made cheaper and affordable for everybody. And we did this infomercial called PowerXL air fryer. I mean, literally, it was that simple. And it just went nutbag, you guys. I mean, it just went crazy. And everybody was like, wow, I want to fry with air instead of oil. It's kind of a no-brainer, right? You're like, all right, either you can fry with 5 quarts of oil or you can fry with air. Okay, I don't think I really need to figure that out. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, my even though I do have stock in Lipitor, I shall go the route of the the route of the healthy choice, my friend. I think my health is worth more than the few pennies that my stock will be worth.
All right, well, you got me on that one. That was freaking hysterical. And listen, don't ever sell that stock because, you know, people they're always going to eat badly. But listen, if you could eat French fries or onion rings or all of those things and then save calories from fat, why wouldn't you do it, right? Because honestly, what I like to say in the book is we call it a healthy crunch, right? So you can get that healthy crunch, that healthy satiation. You're not really giving up anything. That's what I always say. In fact, I feel like you don't have that greasy kind of, oh my God, what did I do to myself feeling when you're done. And Loving Your Air Fryer is all about that. So, you know, what I noticed about people, and I've talked to people for years about air frying. I mean, literally, I was on the forefront of this. And I'm not bragging. I'm just like, that's how long I've been doing the air fryer thing. It's not a trend anymore. It's a cooking technique.
I always say, Eric, it's not. I always say it's not bragging when you're right.
Well, you know, I know some things come off like bragging, but I feel like I need to kind of shout it from the rafters a little bit because when something is a trendy, right, it's all of a sudden trendy. People are like, oh, I don't do the trendy thing, but now it's sort of been around so long, it's sort of marinated and matured, and now we are a cooking technique. That's how air fryers are. And when you go to the supermarket, frozen foods will tell you, oh, do this in a pan in the microwave, God forbid, or your oven, but here's air fryer instructions also. And that's when you know it sort of hits the mainstream. And Loving Your Air Fryer, I wrote it because I wanted people to get the most out of their air fryer. I wanted them to love their air fryer for saving calories and fat from French fries and onion rings and mozzarella sticks, or like we say, mozzarella sticks, right? But falling in love with it and literally just enjoying it for the proteins like steaks and fish and chops and literally everything in between. And this book literally takes you from small bites like you guys. You know, we have sweet and savory mornings. We have small bites you're not sharing. We have veggies for all. We have fold it, roll it, and toss it. You know, so you can do everything from pizza to breakfast to lunch to dinner and dessert. Like, I even do, like, a s'mores ice cream cone air fried, an air fried s'mores ice cream cone. Mm. Like, think about those things, right? That's when you know it's such a versatile item that you're never going to take it off your counter.
Without a doubt. And I think our producer, Tom, did give us the nod that we did get the sound bite from Small Bites. Thanks. But
listen, when I wrote the book, I made sure I put Small Bites in there. And
we appreciate it. It has to be a working relationship if we're going to have this deal to go to Hawaii. I mean, it's give and take here. So
you guys, there's no way. There's no way I would invite you to Hawaii and not put Small Bites in the table. No way.
But I'm going to tell you one of the other things that really made me and Don fall in love with it. As he mentioned, he can't wait for his wife to start using this cookbook because it's really going to elevate how she's using the air fryer. But especially in the times that families are so busy, crazy short on time. I mean, my son was in a baseball tournament this weekend. Three games Saturday, three games today. I'm rushing over to the studio. We've got no time on our hands. And also, the supply chain issues. You can hardly get anything on the shelves. Everybody's always out of stuff. But each recipe that you've put into this book is made using easy to find and time saving ingredients, which makes this perfect because some of these cookbooks we get here, you'll read some of these cookbooks that they're sending. I'm like, I've never even heard of this ingredient. And like, where the heck would I get this in a 200-mile radius? So
That's hysterical. You know, listen, I'm glad you guys brought up, I'm glad you brought up the supply chain thing because, you know, food is so expensive now. And, you know, even when I wrote this, you know, the food was accelerating, but it's so incredibly expensive that, you know, you want to get the best and the most out of it. And the reason air frying is easy is because you kind of like set the timer and it turns off, right? So like you said, everybody's busy. You're taking your kids everywhere. You know, everybody's sort of entering back into the universe after this crazy pandemic. And you forget things, right? You forget to take the stuff out of the oven. You forget to take the stuff out of the toaster oven. But this turns on and turns off by itself. You can set it. It's very simple to use. It'll keep things warm for you. So, you know, it's easy to use. And I think that, like, if you can, and you're talking about your wife has one of these, right?
Yes.
If she looked at these recipes, she would find things that are so simple and so flavorful that I think she's really going to, like, stop saying, I'm not going to just air fry French fries. Because it's not just about that. You know, like, one of my favorite recipes in the book is the bacon blue cheese stuffed buffalo shrimp. And it's I give you a keto option. There's a couple of keto options in here. Air frying is great for keto. And what I like to do when we air fry is I like to use what I call the double dip method. You know, like on Seinfeld, they're like, never like double dipping. Like, I saw you double dip. Don't do that. Well, if you want to double dip. So you guys know, you know the typical breading, right? It's dry, wet, dry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I make sure you do dry, wet, dry, wet, dry, wet, dry. So we double and triple dip sometimes because we want you to get that really healthy crunch out of your air fryer. And that's why you're going to fall in love with your air fryer. And that's why I wrote Loving Your Air Fryer.
And we love it. And Don was also mentioning about the photography that you love.
Yeah. The illustrations were phenomenal.
Oh, thank you.
I was looking at the I love portobello mushrooms, and I saw your portobello mushroom air fryer recipe, and I'm like,
he was licking the page.
That's the first thing I want to try when I get my home.
But you know, Don, that's like super easy, right? And what's great about that recipe is, you know, it's sort of like you know a caprese salad warmed up in a mushroom. And you know, these are things that are very simple and they're very available. Like you said, you know, there's nothing in here that's sort of like, oh man, I have to fly to Hawaii with you guys to get that ingredient and come back, right? So, you know, I tried to keep it simple, but also keep it interesting. And, you know, hopefully people appreciate that. And you know what was odd about the pandemic was, you know, usually when you write a cookbook, you know, you're there for all the photography. You know what was cool about this book? The photography was done on a live Zoom session. And they ran the Zoom session for me live for 3 days. And I was there in spirit and on Zoom and could make tweaks and tugs and get it just right. And it was so cool. You know, we've sort of entered into a whole new world. And the fact that I could have been in Idaho or Iowa doing a photo shoot or Hawaii, Hawaii. And, you know, that's super cool. And just the fact that I'm able to talk to you guys from anywhere, you know, so there's some cool things that came out of it. And this photography is just absolutely stunning, like you said. And I really appreciate that comment.
And
these people put their hearts and souls into these photographs. I mean, if you look at the crispy Brow House tenders, I mean, it looks like you could crunch the page.
and without a doubt. And one of the things I always enjoy asking someone who really spent a lot of time in the kitchen experimenting on a new cookbook is, we always ask them, and sometimes people struggle, but we wrestle them and until they answer is, one, what's your favorite recipe in the book? And two, sometimes this is the more entertaining portion, is which recipe experimentation, do you have any stories of a recipe experimentation that just went completely haywire and gone? You were like, this is going to be great. And then when you tried it, you're like, good golly, that was a terrible idea.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, those are great questions. I think, you know, for me, I love the bacon blue cheese stuff, buffalo shrimp. I'm a Jersey guy. You know, I like simple things. You know, I love buffalo sauce. I mean, I can't say it all. Also, you know, I honestly try to, you know, watch my carbs. I mean, listen, in my line of work, it's easy for me to overindulge because I'm constantly testing and tasting and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm sort of very into keto. I don't do it all the time, but listen, you know, I think it's super smart. And the bacon buffalo stuffed shrimp is something that sort of embodies this cookbook. Lots of flavor, not very difficult. It double dips, like I was saying to you guys before, to make it extra crunchy. And we actually use pork rinds, ground up pork rinds, instead of panko.
Wow.
And those ground up pork rinds, even if you're not on keto, you guys.
That's the reason why I kept my Lipitor stock.
Dude, don't sell your – that's why – did I tell you not to sell
exactly,
it?
Exactly. It sounds delicious.
We all need that. We all need that stock.
Sounds delicious, but now
– it is delicious.
Now, here's the important part. What about the uh-oh, we definitely shouldn't have done that movement?
All right, so I have a lot of those, actually, because, listen, when you're trying to get the most out of your air fryer, when you're trying to love in your air fryer, right, you push it to the limit. And, you know, there are some things that maybe you don't think about. Like, air fryers are literally superheated cyclonic air, right? That means there's, like, a vortex of air that spins around your food. And that's how it crisps it and makes it air instead of oil. Instead of frying it in oil, you fry it in air. Okay. A couple of times, some of the things I put in there started flying around.
Dorothy!
How big was your air fryer?
Click your heels three times!
Exactly. It was like Dorothy and Toto, you know, in the Wizard of Oz. So, you know, those things you have to think about, like when you say, use parchment paper, well, don't. Because that's going to fly around. It's going to fly around the air fryer. So that's why I'm glad you guys asked that. So one of my favorite fun desserts, and this is sort of, I'm glad you guys asked, the s'mores in a cake cone. Now, that is just a fun, very simple. It's literally marshmallows and chocolate chips and graham crackers in a cake cone, right? Sounds easy. But if you don't put the cake cones in, like, a little cup, they're going to fly around the air fryer. And I forgot to tell the food stylist that when they were making the beautiful photos.
Oh, they probably thought you were pulling a prank on them.
It's true, right? And listen, I'm so close to it that I didn't think to tell them this, but we added put it in like an espresso cup, right? So now you put the cones in an espresso cup and then it's perfect. But if you look at the dessert, how sweet it is, and you look at s'mores in a cup, you'll see how beautiful that dessert is. It's simple and literally maybe a six-year-old could do it. I don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah, we don't want to get sued. We don't want to have three-year-olds knocking on your door.
Yeah, labor control coming in.
We don't want that, but you know, it's something very simple and fun to make, and that answers your question perfectly, because the cones will fly around the air fryer if you don't put them in.
Wow, I appreciate that, Eric. It's been such a joy talking to you. This is the perfect reason of why you are America's favorite TV chef, and the exact reason why, guess why Eric is a best-selling author. He sold nearly
1 million.
You must have read the copy.
I did.
1 million copies.
That's incredible.
Incredible, sir. It's well-deserved. We couldn't say thank you enough for joining us tonight. Please share website, social media, anything before you go. But before you say that, we want to make sure that everyone goes out and buys your new book, Loving Your Air Fryer, 110 Fast and Easy Recipes for Morning to Late Night Munching. Thanks again. And like I said, share anything before you go if you'd like.
I'd love to. Hey, you guys, it's been a blast. And, you know, I listen to you guys and I really appreciate being on your show. And, you know, Loving Your Air Fryer was written for everybody to get a healthier crunch, get the most out of your air fryer. Eric Thies TV on Facebook. I'm Eric Thies on Instagram. Eric Thies on YouTube. And my website, you guessed it, ericthies.com. So hit me up. I'm always happy to answer questions. And I had a literal blast. Loving your air fryer, and I love you guys.
Will do. I look forward to seeing you in Hawaii, pal. Have a good night.
I'll let you know my wife does.
I already sent you the ticket.
Thanks.
She can come too. I'll bring my wife.
Okay, exactly. Sounds good.
That was fun.
It was great.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like we said, I mean, as affordable as air fryers are now, I mean, my goodness.
Like I said, I know a lot of people that have them, but they don't know how to use them, and I think this book is a key to making healthier meals, and don't sell your stock.
double up. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because like you said, we all love junk food.
Yeah.
Unhealthy, it's like, as much as we want to eat healthy, that little voice in our head says,
do it.
No,
do it.
Do it. It tastes so good.
It's not for you.
It's not, but it is for you. Your doctor's a liar. Fake news. He's not looking out for he's working for Big Pharma. It's all a conspiracy.
Yes.
Or am I the only one that has those voices?
I think
Don?
I had the voices too, but they tell me in Italian.
Okay. Because you were looking at me. I was like, I think Don's going to seek me to have some.
I don't always understand him, but I get the gist.
But we can't end the show without talking to our favorite individual. And that is Pennsylvania's most influential chef.
Chef Barbie Marshall.
How's it going, Chef Barbie?
Hey, how are you guys?
We're excellent.
Great.
What's going on tonight?
Well, tonight, it's a beautiful night in the city. I don't know if you guys are stuck in studio. I'm sorry. I'm out and about, and it's beautiful. So I just wanted to talk about Old City Kitchens today. It's like a really great space. And I think everybody should check it out for dinners and classes. It's really intimate, especially during this climate, to like have a small group of gathering of friends, but not at your home. So it's on Market Street just before 2nd. Got to check it out.
It sounds like a good idea. Are you familiar with that location, Don?
I'm not. Unfortunately, I am not.
Oh, look at that. Chef Barbie.
That's why we have Chef Barbie there. To let us.
Well, they have some pretty interesting guest chefs lining up doing classes and doing brunches, things like that. So, yeah, definitely check them out.
We appreciate the tip. See, now you know, Don, and knowing is half the battle. G.I. Joe! That's Chef Barbie.
Talk to you next week, guys.
That's always good for at least one good job.
I like it. I like it.
End it out for us, Don.
Donato Marino with DNL Bean and Brisket Service. You can find us on Facebook. You can give us a call at 215-365-5521 for any of your espresso or cappuccino needs. And if you just want to talk.
Awesome. And always, audience, remember, don't waste your money on paper. Thank you. I'm Derek Tim of BlueJeanFood.com at Small Bites Radio. We end the show like we always do with a joke of the week from Jackie, the joke man, Martlin.
Hi, I'm Jackie Martling, and this is Small Bites. A guy comes up to the checkout at a supermarket, puts one roll of toilet paper, a pint of milk, and one frozen TV dinner on the counter. The checkout girl says, "Are you single?" The guy says, "Yes, I am." "How could you tell?" "You're really freaking ugly."